we ask sentiment questions about what concerns miners, what are your pain points, and what keeps you awake at night, essentially. How do you manage your risk? What are your growth constraints?
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Join us as we delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver market insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit subscribe for your bi-weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid anytime, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining today, and welcome to another episode of the FCAT Crypto Brief Podcast. We have a very special episode for you all today as we're joined by Alex Neumuller, researcher at the Cambridge Center of Alternative Finance. Also with me today is Jack Newrider and Matt Allen. As usual, I'm Max Waddington. For our listeners, Alex and his team released a digital mining industry report earlier this year, so that'll be the topic of discussion today. I encourage everyone here to check out the report. The link will be in the show notes of the podcast, or you can head over right to the Cambridge Center of Alternative Finance website and find it there. I promise you, you will definitely learn a thing or two, and we probably won't be able to cover everything included in that report today. Gentlemen, I guess before we dive into that, we do have a couple news stories to cover. We can try to make it quick. Jack, I'll hand it off to you to talk about the Balancer hack.
Yeah, I'll try to make it as quick as I possibly can. There were sort of two major negative events across DeFi this week that we thought were worth mentioning in terms of recapping some of the news. The first was an exploit on Balancer on Monday, November 3rd. Balancer is a sort of longstanding DeFi protocol in crypto terms anyways. It was launched in 2020, functions as an AMM, so you can like trade from one asset to another, and they have liquidity pools that depositors can earn yield from. $128 million is the number floating around for what was believed to be stolen out of the pools, specifically pools that were like holding ETH or ETH denominated like liquid staked ETH assets. It was across several chains, Ethereum, Polygon, Arbitrum, Base, Barrachain, Sonic. You know, some of these chains, particularly the ones that you know were more recently launched, that are a little bit, I think you could argue, more centralized, took various sort of responses. Sonic froze suspected addresses. Barrachain actually paused their chain and hard forked because Balancer is sort of core to some of the actual chain design and consensus. And there was also, interesting note, there was some evidence, some people are suspecting that the attack may have been vibe coded or partially assisted with AI because there's essentially like instructions encoded in the actual production code that you'd typically otherwise strip out to conserve gas. And it sort of suggested that potentially someone just copy and pasted directly from an LLM. A lot of that's circumstantial. We'll probably find out more information, but like Hal Bourne had put out, you know, in their report that that they saw some evidence that maybe that was the case. So it's an interesting thing to start thinking about, like the assistance of AI in both, you know, helping attackers exploit protocols, but then, you know, hopefully for the good guys, you know, helping defend protocols potentially and battle test them. So that'll be interesting to follow. And then the other one real quickly, less than like 24 hours later, a platform called Stream Finance, which is an on-chain asset manager, like yield platform that offers like single assets like XUSD, where you can deposit a stablecoin and receive a receipt token that effectively tries to like earn yield on whatever that specific asset is on your behalf. Though it wasn't very transparent where they were getting the yield from. They posted on X that they had a $93 million or more in losses from an external third-party fund manager. It's unclear what the cause of that was. Might be related to the Balancer hack, but others are thinking that it might be related to October 10th, which is like a month ago, where there was a lot of liquidations and some people suspect market makers or others might have run into trouble because it was, you know, the largest, at least by nominal dollar value, amount of liquidations in a short period of time in crypto. And then the problem is that because these assets were used as collateral on on lending protocols like Morpho and Euler, where users can loop these assets for yield. Even though the vaults themselves are siloed, there's, you know, sort of risks to all of the people that posted collateral, where there's like bad debt in these pools, and people that lent stablecoins in those vaults are sort of stuck because utilization ratios are like 100% on those lent stablecoins. And so there's a bunch of like fallout that still needs to happen, and determining what actually happened in both of these cases, we'll find out. But yeah, not the happiest of news across DeFi, but worth reporting nonetheless.
And Matt, I'm hoping you have some good news for us.
Yeah, I can definitely brighten the mood here. Iris Energy, which is a Bitcoin miner, announced earlier this week a $9.7 billion AI cloud deal with Microsoft. So this is on the Bitcoin miner and AI front. Just for a bit of background on Iris Energy, they were previously a pure play Bitcoin miner, but earlier this year, they pivoted heavily into AI hosting. So they hit 50 exahash in June. They announced at the end of Q2 that they were now 100% focused, not on scaling any more Bitcoin mining, but just on scaling their AI and HPC business. However, this announcement was, you know, roughly 4 or 5 months ago, and it was kind of a wait and see, hold, see if they were able to announce a large deal with a hyperscaler. And lo and behold, they announced one, and that's for sure. Just for some key context on how large this deal is, looking at their most recent financials, their annualized revenue for Q3 2025 is less than $1 billion. This deal alone will add $1.9 billion in ARR. It's certainly emblematic of the shift in the Bitcoin mining industry, which previously was just focused on bringing as much hash rate online as quickly as possible, to now miners view themselves as a portfolio of megawatts, and they're going to make strategic decisions to maximize the value of these megawatts, whether that means expanding into more Bitcoin mining or into hosting for hyperscalers. So certainly a very large deal, and I think we'll play very nicely with our guest today.
Absolutely. I'm sure both of these topics will probably be revisiting pretty shortly in terms of the fallout that Jack mentioned and maybe more deals around Bitcoin mining. But thank you, gentlemen. Now we can get to the fun part. Alex, my team and I and folks all around Fidelity have been following your work for years now. The Cambridge Center of Alternative Finance has really carved itself out as like doing some of the most comprehensive research around Bitcoin mining for a long time. So you're well known around here, but for those who don't know you and your team, I'd love to hear more about yourself and what you guys do.
Fantastic. Thank you, Max. I really appreciate the invite to the podcast. And yeah, absolutely happy to say a couple of words about myself. So I think my story is very similar to that of many others starting in traditional finance and somehow at some point being interested in the space and informing yourself, right? So I did pretty much everything from corporate banking, trading, asset management, and these sort of thematic areas. But from quite early on, I was interested in the space. I mean, in the beginning, it was more Bitcoin from an, I would say, more ideological perspective, specifically this topic like self-custody, were things that very strongly resonated with my own beliefs. And this is how I can get informed. And then the space grew, right? As we saw, for instance, Ethereum emerging, and suddenly the ecosystem became a lot broader. We saw DeFi and all these new applications. So I kept, unfortunately, I was not an early investor. But at least I kept up with the pace, right? Until some point when things got a bit more comprehensive and you had to focus. But ultimately, I have a bit of a, I would say, study career as well. So I studied quite a long time in my life, and at some point ended up in Cambridge, to keep the long story short. And at that point, I was already to some extent involved in the space. So I was remotely managing mining operations in China. But with 2021, essentially, I think many knew what happened, which was when China, government clamped down on mining activity, that naturally impacted the entire business model around it. What I found, however, was that pretty much next door to where I was kind of finishing my degree in Cambridge, there was a Center for Alternative Finance, right? And by that point, they already, I think, had done some great research on the mining space, put out a lot of public information that I think was very well received and very valuable. So I thought, well, I do have this bit of quantitative finance background, but then also this practitioner experience, actually, when it comes to the hardware market, logistics, and all these kind of topics, right, where miners are located. So I thought that, well, I might as well see if I can help somehow. And again, to keep it brief, since 2021, essentially, I'm with the center, and about 3 years, really kind of leading the climate, energy and climate part. But now our focus is even more so on Bitcoin, because I think it's just a very vast ecosystem. And what we want to drill down is, first of all, and we will talk about this more like the mining report, to create really, I think, research that can move the needle and provide like very valuable information that would otherwise be very hard to get. It's pretty much off-chain data, right? That we are now trying to collect, analyze, and then essentially publish for the overall good. Yeah, that's briefly about myself. I'm very, very quick to the center. The center is actually the largest research center at Judge Business School, and is predominantly focused actually on the, I would say, knowledge transfer to regulators, supervisors. So the core, I would say, competency is more digital finance related. But again, I think we carved here out a bit our niche when it comes to kind of the environmental energy impact of digital assets, specifically when it comes to Bitcoin. But we do look at others as well. And this is essentially how kind of ultimately the report originated.
I wouldn't call your research on Bitcoin mining niche at this point. And I would agree, and I think pretty strongly, that this report in particular has benefited the industry and helped Bitcoin grow, specifically to the point you've mentioned about just making so much data that us as researchers can't really find publicly available. And I would argue it's already moved the needle tremendously. But thank you so much. Can you at this point provide us with some context of the report, maybe for those who haven't read it? How did you go about it? And maybe some key highlights, what you thought were like most interesting?
Absolutely. So essentially, look, to take a step back, a bit of history. So what we were previously doing was predominantly relying on theoretical models. So we were looking into what kind of public information we can use to, for instance, understand the electricity consumption of Bitcoin. How can we translate this to emissions? We also at some point worked together with other industry stakeholders like mining pools that helped us to understand where mining activity is located. But before the report, I would say that our work was prominently theoretical. And I think what we did now was really kind of complementing this theoretical work with this practitioner insights. And that was one of the key objectives when I joined the center that I had from the beginning, essentially, to really make sure that we, at some point, because if we think back to 2021, 2022, there was still a bit of a gap between what I would say was experienced by practitioners and what was often being published in research. So my idea was really kind of how can we bridge those gaps and make sure that we provide simply the best data possible. And the report happened with long conversation. And I want to, at that point, give a bit of a shout out to Taras Kulik from the Bitcoin Mining Council, but also Ben Gagnon, who was very, engaged at that point. We had kind of conversation and see how can we kind of engage with the stakeholder bases. And they were really key to help for the first report, right, motivate those mining firms or generally mining firms to contribute to our research, because as you imagine, it is quite an ask to provide a 25 question survey that takes a lot of time and asks sometimes detailed questions, but in the end allowed us to create, I would say, this quite substantial report on the granularity of a lot of data. So that is kind of how it happened. And ultimately, I think we were really, really very positively surprised when we, in the end, when we saw all the responses. So really great. We showed some of the contributors in the report as well, but naturally also to those who decided to contribute anonymously. We know naturally where those are, so we do have a due diligence process, but not everyone wants to be shown publicly. So I think we got in total 49 mining firms and nearly covered 50% of the entire network hash rate. So I think it was a very substantial sample that we got. And ultimately, it allowed us to generate some, I would say, very key and contemporary insights, right? So for instance, one of the key topics where we saw a bit of, given, I think, with help from the Bitcoin Mining Council, we saw that the US companies were about 50% of our participants were from the US. So for our next survey, for instance, we really worked hard to look, kind of engage people from other areas of the world as well, but still I think it was very, very representative overall, given that there is simply a lot of mining activity in the United States. what we found was that the US definitely cemented its position as the global mining hub. We saw emerging activity in South America. We saw emerging activity in quite notable activity in South America, in the Middle East as well. We saw emerging activity then in Africa, specifically Ethiopia, but then also kind of continued activity in Northern Europe. Some areas where naturally get a bit tricky when it comes to data are, frankly, Russia and China, right? Where it's just, I guess, very hard to, I would say, generally connect and then get this kind of data. But overall, I think we saw some very interesting insights when it comes to the changes in the geographical distribution as compared to, for instance, the data we had when we worked with mining pools, where the last estimate were January 2022, whereas now we have a bit of more insight specifically when it comes to South America, Africa, but also the Middle East. If we think about traction, so personally, most traction in terms of content was definitely requested when it comes to energy, right? And giving a kind of a more recent estimate of energy sources used, given that we had this strong shift since our last estimate, specifically away from China, away from Kazakhstan, where naturally you have quite a still comparatively higher share of fossil fuels, right? And specifically coal. What we saw then, based on kind of our new results, we have more than about 52.4% of sustainable energy sources, about 43% are renewables. The rest is nuclear. So that was quite a stark difference as compared to our latest estimate before, which was from January 2022, where we had about 37% sustainable energy. What is also interesting is the composition of the fossil fuel mix, because it does make a huge difference when it comes to the emission intensity between coal and gas, right? For instance, coal has a much higher emission intensity than natural gas. And what we really saw specifically with, I guess, this increasing share in the US, that kind of natural gas very much replaced essentially coal when it comes to the fossil fuel mix composition specifically. So overall, if you look at all these kind of developments, what we found was that if we take this new energy mix and come and create an emissions estimate and compare that with an emissions estimate, for instance, that that is based on our January 2022 electricity mix, that we see about 43% reduction essentially. So it really matters kind of when we make those sort of estimates to have a very good understanding of, okay, what energy source essentially power Bitcoin, if you want to simplify it like that. And I think that was a very, very important kind of finding for us as well. We got other more environmental related topics that previously we saw frequently discussed, right? For instance, when it comes to potential emission mitigation, when it is about utilizing stranded energy sources that otherwise we had gas, that have often been discussed, right? But so what we wanted to do in our contribution was, I think, really putting a name to the face essentially, where we saw, okay, can we obtain some data that helps us? Okay, we just talk about this conceptually, but also say, okay, how does this at least at the point of the survey concretely looks like? And I think what we found there is that there's a wide range, and it heavily depends on assumptions you take. So we did a scenario analysis. And for those who are interested, I would definitely encourage you to look at the report, because there we have everything described in detail. I can't do this now because otherwise there won't be any time left. But essentially, we talk about like between 1 and 10% of the total emissions of Bitcoin could be considered kind of mitigated by utilizing essentially otherwise cleared gas. So those, I think, were kind of the main points. There were naturally a lot of other things as well. For instance, we ask sentiment questions about what concerns miners, what are your payments, and what keeps you awake at night, essentially. How do you manage your risk? What are your growth constraints? So there were a lot of different angles there as well. We looked into the operational side, the hardware market, the firmware market. So generally looking into these kind of aspects as well.
Yeah, I personally thought the sentiment analysis piece was one of the more interesting to me personally. I'm not like super hands-on in the Bitcoin mining space, so it was interesting to see like what like their largest concerns are and how that may have changed over time. Was there anything like especially surprising that you found in terms of like just how miners are feeling lately?
I think, yes. So basically the sample was taken from June last year. So if I would do the survey now, I would, to be fair, I expect some differences, right?
Oh, you can add that as well. Yeah.
Yes. So this is why we are currently looking into a second iteration. It would be very keen. And then we can start this kind of time series analysis where we actually compare how things changed and how things evolved. Overall, what we found is that basically the concerns are very much related to the risk management strategies, right? Long-term energy prices, business diversification, those are those kind of things, right? Power hedging, basically governmental actions, and these are the kind of things that are made the main concerns. And then when it comes to the risk management, yeah, I said before, kind of power hedging, business diversification, and I think we already was talking about AI before, right? Where we see now when we look at public companies, at least a lot of, I think, engagement in this space. So it's, I would not say necessarily surprising. I think it's still kind of very valuable and empirical kind of like evidence that those things are not just being discussed, but so I think we have some direct insights here. What is interesting will be kind of if we do another survey and then look possibly how things changed over time. For instance, when we look about growth constraints, one of the things mentioned that I think will be quite similar is procurement and logistical challenges being rated quite as a quite strong growth constraint. And I think if we just think back a couple of, or generally earlier in the year, right, where this entire SoftGo situation happened, I mean, that definitely caused a little headache, I guess, for some mining firms and or pretty much like all, I guess, who operate in the US and ordered something. Then we had this entire tariff situation, right, that obviously added some type of uncertainty as well. So yeah, I do understand those kind of results, but what we will tend to do in the possibly next survey is to add a bit more sentiment questions specifically about the future as well. What we ask, for instance, where do you see Bitcoin by the end of the year, right? This was end of 2024. And we found that Bitcoin miners actually seem to be a bit more conservative besides the actual outcome. And in terms of hash rate, they were a bit too optimistic. But not too much, right? So essentially what we found is that in terms of Bitcoin price and in terms of hash rate development, their prediction was pretty much on point, honestly. So that was also quite interesting to see.
Yeah, one point that I always find really interesting and is discussed a lot in Bitcoin mining is miners as a flexible load and participation in DSR programs. And I thought the report did a really good job of highlighting how miners participate in these programs and the impact and potential benefits to the grid. Would you mind just touching on that a little bit? I think our listeners would find that very interesting.
Yes, absolutely. So that is a very interesting topic, right? And I didn't mention this before, but this first iteration of the report, for those who are interested, it's really not... one of the key goals was also educational. So we did not just jump right into all the results and were basically outlining our findings. So the report really, or one of the goals of the report is to give the reader a proper understanding of the entire industry, starting with what is even Bitcoin. So it's a bit longer, so it's a bit on the longer end, right? A bit over 100 pages. But ultimately, for those who may not have the chance to look deeply into the subject, I think the report contains everything that you need to know about Bitcoin, a bit about its origins, and then what is even mining? So what are those companies actually doing? So how does it look into practice? Everything is kept very concise. So, and again, for those topics, like Matthew mentioned, like demand side response, there is always an explanation about, okay, what is actually the same? The same goes for instance, flare mitigation in these areas. And essentially mining is in that sense very unique that it's very location agnostic and flexible, right? So sometimes if we think about some consumers, you cannot just shut down an aluminum smelter up, you know, you cannot just very in seconds, right? It's just not like possible. Otherwise you might run into, if you talk about other data centers, like cloud storage and those sort of, I mean, the availability is important, right? You can't just switch off, you know, a data center simply that hosts, you know, content that someone wants to consume on YouTube or something. So mining is very unique here because essentially the opportunity cost of switching off your ASIC is essentially you don't mine. And most likely if you run your own operations, there is no kind of customer relationship. So you can very quickly decide for yourself, hey, I'm going to switch off now and I'm just not going to mine. And that might be super helpful specifically for grid operators, because what they need to do, they need to make sure that the grid is at a certain frequency. And let's say some sort of event happens, whether that's a some sort of environmental issue, you know, a hurricane, or if a power plant went offline, you know, these kind of things impact the grid. And then you have a couple of options, right? In the past, it was more kind of supply side driven, where you have kind of excess generation. We call those peaker plants that can be like gas turbines that can be very quickly, you know, they're already active, but then they can very quickly ramp up. But what we can see here that already happens with what some mining firms are doing is essentially functioning as this virtual power plant, where a grid operator can, if something happens, can come to you and say, hey, can you please, or I mean, can you, there's obviously a contractual basis most likely, but can you switch off, for instance, now, because we just need some capacity, and then they can do this very, very quickly, or even the grid operator can manage operations to some extent by themselves. This is kind of a very interesting use case, right? Because that shifts the focus a bit from just the supply side, how you can, for instance, balance the grid, to also the demand side. And the demand side will become more and more important as we integrate more kind of intermittent renewables, and which naturally for grid operators is a lot more difficult to integrate than just some like, coal power plant, coal-fired power plant, or some base load, because you don't produce the same amount, or you cannot manage your production that well, right? You are reliant on when the sun is shining, when the wind is blowing. And you naturally can obviously to some degree expect those things. So, but still, right? If something happens, those sort of data center operation, like specifically in mining, can help to very quickly react, right? And may even lead to the reduction of reliance on this kind of peaker power plants that, you know, need to kept online to just very quickly ramp up, because ultimately for the grid, it doesn't matter if you increase the supply very quickly or if you reduce the demand very quickly. Essentially, that comes out at the kind of, that's the same thing essentially. So that's one of the very interesting issues. And yeah, again, it's a bit described in more detail in the report, but to I think reasonable degree.
Yeah, maybe I can sneak one more question in for you. I'm always interested to hear from people that are like deep on the mining spaces around fee revenue, and the story that obviously like long term, I think there has to be more meaningful fee revenue to ensure security of Bitcoin longer term. But be curious, like, your thoughts on the fact that fee revenue is still de minimis relative to block subsidies. Is that always going to be the case, or what? Curious on your thoughts. I know there's no right answer, but from the data that you've looked at and your thoughts.
I mean, it's a very interesting topic, right? And what I need to say is that we are currently looking into, I think many in this discussion call this the security budget, right? Kind of the incentivization for mining firms available to keep mining. And naturally, as we gradually, halving after halving, every 210,000 blocks, we reduce the block subsidy, right? And currently it's 3.125 Bitcoin. Which is, we see already hash price being a bit, definitely a bit tricky for some companies. But those kind of block subsidy is always decreasing, right? And usually the, I guess, general idea would be that fees revenue at some point really take up, because ultimately, as we go along halving after halving, those fee revenue needs to essentially substitute the block subsidy, right? The reduction in block subsidy. Because ultimately, I mean, at some point, there won't be any block subsidy at all anymore, right? When all Bitcoins are being mined. But even before, right, if we just think about maybe not one, but maybe two or three halvings in the future, the kind of block subsidy in terms of Bitcoin will be incredibly low. There might be that some of the Bitcoin price is just escalating, right? And there's a lot of, as you said, right, I think there is no right answer. But naturally, what we're currently seeing is not really a very strong fee uptake, right? We have, I think, in terms of the share. So usually, shortly, there is something called block reward, which consists of block subsidy and transaction fee. So the entire reward a miner gets per block. And the share currently of transaction fees essentially on the entire block reward is, I think, like less than 1%. I think 0.6% currently. But at some point, this needs to be 100, right? So. And it needs to be sufficiently, miners just need to be sufficiently incentivized, because otherwise there could be, I mean, there's a lot of, I think, ideas that we might discuss in our research paper that, or in our paper that I might not like touch upon now, you know, from altruistic mining, where obviously those who hold a lot of Bitcoin might be incentivized to continue mining, right, even at the loss, because, you know, we want to make sure that the security is being there. But I'll absolutely. So I think the current fee revenue, at least, is quite tricky to if you think about just a couple of halvings ahead to kind of sustain the right incentivization to keep the backbone really mining of the security backbone of Bitcoin besides cryptography alive and well. But yeah, ultimately we will see what happens, right? There might be a lot of developments that I can currently not anticipate.
Awesome. Thank you for that, Alex. I can't believe how much we've covered. We've got miners and their concerns, mostly on the cost side of things. We've seen the shift in renewable energy sources, as well as looking into diversifying revenue streams, their continued flexibility and their ability to support like power grids. And we've got some open questions on the security budget, along with the expansion of the mining, like Bitcoin mining across the globe, which I'm sure you will cover in depth thoroughly in years to come. So thank you so much, Alex. This has been a tremendous discussion. We've just kind of nibbled on what is left in the report. So again, I encourage everyone to go check that out. Really well done. Amazing work, Alex, and your team. We hope to have you back.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2025 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.